it. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I'm really honored to be joined by a good man. You know, there's no other way to put it. Mr. Michael Letts, a former law enforcement officer and a present pastor, is on the line from South Carolina, and we're having a dialogue about, you know, the gun issue. And Michael, I forgot the last question that Tom asked. You remember what he asked?
I do, and I'm very honored and very grateful for Tom to give his opinion. And let me address his last question was, from a biblical, from a Christian standpoint, you know, we are commanded to be as Christ, and that is true. Romans 8:29 says our purpose in life. We have to remember, we are not Christ. We are not perfect, but we are commanded to be becoming perfect, which means the only way you become like Christ is to have Christ's spirit indwelling within you and giving you guidance and wisdom as the day progresses. So with that having been kept in mind, his point was Christ, at the time of them bringing him before a Pilate, when they arrested him, Peter drew his sword, cut off the one of the guard's ears, and Christ told him to sheathe his sword, and he put the ear back on. His point being, violence was not condoned. The point is it was not condoned because Christ knew the ultimate plan is that it would only occur that way, that he had to die for the redemption of mankind. It was not implying, again, as we see throughout Scripture, that we do not have an obligation to protect and to save life. And that is the key. Christ was led by his spirit. If we have Christ's spirit in there within us, God will give us the wisdom to know when to intervene and when not to intervene. But quite frankly, Earl, with the violence and the just demonic atmosphere that we have in our society today, most people are trying to take lives not for a nefarious or good purpose to redeem mankind, but to try to destroy life. And God expects us to honor and help protect those. Just as I said, God would expect you to honor and protect a child that's in trouble.
So let me say this to you. There's no shortage of guns in our society, over 400 million. There's only 325 right. million or so people. No shortage of guns. The way the laws are configured is where people have a hard time. You know, anybody can buy a gun who hasn't committed a crime and own a gun and not have to be trained in that weapon.
And that's a tragedy.
Really. Yeah, it's a tragedy, but it's true. Okay, so explain how it makes sense that all of these people can purchase guns and you want them to be able to walk around at some point in time and brandish those weapons as if, you know, it's back in the good old days with John Wayne and those guys. And yet these people don't have to go to gun ranges. Law enforcement has to go and keep their training up to date and others. But the average citizen does not have to do that. And yet we continue to push more and more guns in there. How does that make sense?
It doesn't, Earl. And that's where you and I can shake hands and we find something to agree upon. Let me use a classic illustration. You have the ability to drive, or you have the ability to own a car. But because of the fact that we know that vehicle can cause a lot of other consequences improperly used, you don't know how to use it, you run people over, you create damage, we require not that you tell us why you need a car or defend the purpose behind having a car, but you have to go get a driver's license. You have to be trained to use it. The same application here. You should have the right to be able to protect and defend yourself, period. But just because you have that right doesn't mean that you should have the gun and not know what you're doing with it, because you can create more issues than you can help. And that is, I think, the point that we're missing twofold now in this conversation. It's not just that you're trained, but we also must change our educational system and our justice system to make sure that we are upholding law and that it's equitable for all parties and that people learn to respect and value life and authority.
So what educational system are you talking about? Public school education?
Or that is a great debate, Earl. I would love to have you. I'm very open to that. But yes, I think public education system is something I think kids from a young age need to be taught. Firearms are not a joke. They're not a toy. They're lethal.
Well, so why should that be? I grew up in an educational system that didn't have that kind of training because I grew up in a not in a rural area. I can understand that in a rural area, but in a city, certainly they did not teach us anything about firearms. And so in many instances, that's why many of us don't have firearms because, you know, when we going back to the 60s, when I was in began my time in the public school system, there was no, you know, there weren't many guns as there are now. And so when we talk about blanket statements about teaching kids about firearms, that, you know, many of us are opposed to that. That's not the role of the public school system to teach people about firearms.
Well, yeah, I think it's interesting. It's not really the role of the public school system to teach driver ed either, but we do it because we know the consequences of society on people not understanding proper safety.
Well, driver's ed is I think, a difference. But go ahead, finish your point, and I'll respond.
The point being is whether you're rural or whether you're urban, firearms are a very large part of our society. And they are largely used in crime and other areas as well. And they're here with us, and people need to understand what their purpose is and what they're for and how to use them.
Okay, so we know what their purpose is. Clearly, they're to kill.
They are to kill, but they're also, but to be fair, Earl, they're to kill, but they're also to deter. Somebody, if you're fixing to steal my chicken and you got a gun to you, you're probably going to leave my chicken alone. I don't necessarily have to shoot you because you're stealing my chicken, but it will serve as a deterrent.
So let me say this. You know, as a person who owns some things, again, things, I don't believe that things should have the value of life. That's why they're called. That's why they're called things.
That's good moral training, Earl. That's good moral training.
And
where is that going in society?
Well, so this is. Let's go to the phones quickly. Who do we have on the line, Sam?
Eric from Tosa.
Hey, Eric, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what, my friend?
Hi, Earl. I'd just like to ask your guest really quickly. First question is and if you can answer these in order, is the first one would be, what do gun owners fear? Because gun owners are always kind of constantly talking about having to arm themselves and open carry and have these weapons on them constantly. What do they fear, if not other gun owners? And so
Eric, hang on. Let him respond to the first one.
Yeah, well, two real quickly, Earl. I think the first thing we fear, even beyond protecting our own property, is the inability to protect ourselves against an oppressive or a tyrannical government. You see that happening now in other countries in Australia, that they can do things. If you're not armed, if you can't protect yourself, they basically tell you what to do, when to do it, and force compliance or force your death. And I think that's one of the things that our Constitution guaranteed in the Second Amendment. The second thing is just what we just talked about, the ability to protect oneself, not just from an oppressive government or a tyrannical government, but also the ability to defend your own life and your own property.
Okay, so against other gun owners, because there's no real need to have a gun if someone comes in and burglarizes a home. So, and the first part of your thing is absolutely preposterous. In other words, a comedian, let me say really quickly, a comedian said this pretty succinctly, is that you and anybody making that argument apparently doesn't understand the concept of tanks and rocket ships and things like that that will destroy your whole tyrannical government fight. But nonetheless, please don't interrupt me. Let me finish my thought. Is that is designed, that's an argument left in 1787, because today that's preposterous. Our government is already tyrannical and oppressive and all these things, and all you folks, good guys with guns, haven't done squat about it in these 250 years since. So my primary question was, so you really need to stop making that argument, because it's a preposterous argument and it makes you sound dumb, to be honest. So
Eric, we don't need to be condescending. We don't need to be condescending, but quickly.
Well, it sounds dumb. I'm not saying he's dumb.
Okay,
it sounds dumb.
Go ahead.
So insurance, my second question is, you spoke of an inanimate object. I have an inanimate object called a car, but when I turn my key, it's no longer an inanimate object. I have a home that's an inanimate object, but when people step in it and slip and fall, it's no longer an inanimate object. I have owned businesses for years that are inanimate objects, but when someone hurts themselves in my business, it's no longer an inanimate object. So what's your argument against insuring weapons that people own, just like every other item that we own that is potentially dangerous, insuring your weapons, insuring guns? Because I believe that would be something that would definitely certainly curtail the ownership and register and account for all these folks running around with weapons that we honestly, those that choose not to have weapons, have no idea they exist.
Hey, Eric,
so I'll hang up and
yeah,
listen to the call. Thank you.
Good stuff, Eric. Thank you very much. You want to respond?
Sure, I'd be glad to, Earl. You know, on the issue of insurance, I think that's a question that should be explored and valued. I mean, the question, because of car insurance, what's the purpose behind it? It's to pay for damages. That's certainly something that could be discussed, obviously, but at what point do we draw a line? And that's an open question. There has to be accountability. I think when you talk about insurance, there also has to be the element of accountability. You have to be accountable for your actions. So in other words, if I walk in on a seat that there's a wet floor and I'm not careful and cautious and I fall, I realize that what I'm saying is controversial. You should be able to sue them regardless. But, you know, at what point does my lack of judgment and common sense supersede that and mean that you're responsible for my lack of common sense? It's a valid question to be discussed.
You were born, and a lot of this debate about guns, again, is based on where people were born and who were kind of grown up with weapons, you know, and mm-hmm. and it's a part of their lexicon. It's a part of their lives. It's part of their history. And then others, you know, who are in the North for the most part, we weren't born with guns. And so we don't see it as an extension of our lives.
Correct.
And that's where really I think most of this debate and argument is centered on. But I think, I don't know if it was Tom earlier who stated, nobody's trying to take anybody's guns away. But we do know that happen with this debate on people's Second Amendment rights to own bazookas and to own five 50 caliber machine guns. That you can do that in this country. It makes no sense. Hang on, we got to take another quick break. We'll be right back.